D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5. The Game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, birthday boy David Janes here with you. The big news in Titans land last night. Chad Brinker steps down as president of football operations. To help us discuss that more, we go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend from the Tennessean, Nick Suss. Hi, Nick. How are you?
I'm here. How are you guys?
We are here as well. We are also doing well. Thank you for joining us. So, Nick, we have to start. You had an extensive report on Chad Brinker stepping down as president of football operations, and I seized on one graph in your lengthy story, and we need you to help us clarify exactly what you meant. You wrote, quote, "The source said many of the front office shakeups felt less like the collaborative associations they were billed as, and more like conflict management strategies to allow the organization's leaders to make the decisions they wanted without hurting feelings or directly alienating anyone." Can you please elaborate on that?
I mean, I can elaborate, but I think we can also just understand viscerally what these last 3 years have been. Like, if you look through it through the lens of what Chad Brinker's role has been since he got here, in a little more than 3 years, he went from guy who worked for the guy who hired him to guy who was above the guy who hired him to guy who was above the guy he hired to guy who was beneath the guy he hired. It has been
that about sums it up.
It has been a convoluted system that the Titans have been running the front office. And I think that there were people who, from the very beginning, sniffed out that this was not a sustainable business model. And I will give credit to the people who sniffed out that this business model was maybe not super sustainable. I will also say this. Chad Brinker comes from a scouting background. He alludes to that in his statement about his resignation. He essentially got pushed up the ladder into a role that did not allow him to do the things that he preferred to do. And it is my understanding that months of that led to his decision to move on from the Titans. We can re-legislate all of the strange conflict mitigation strategies of, okay, well, if we give this person this role, then they'll stick around even though we don't want them to do the thing that they used to be doing, and this and that. It's pretty consistent with what we saw 2 years ago when Brinker was promoted ahead of Rand, despite Rand retaining the GM title. It's pretty consistent with what we saw with months of talk about collaboration instead of one person having final say. It's pretty consistent with what the Titans have been really over these last 4 years of dissent on the field. There has been dissent with an I back behind the scenes of who's in charge and all of that stuff. And I'm not here for the palace intrigue. I am not trying to say this is the interesting thing. I think office politics are exceedingly boring, and it's frustrating that we can reduce a sport we all love watching because of the action and the drama to office politics. But look, to my understanding of the situation, this was not the healthiest working situation from Brinker's perspective, and he removed himself from it.
How should Chad Brinker's tenure be remembered, Nick? Because I believe the Titans were 12-39 in his 3 years with the team. He brought in Mike Borgonzi, so time will tell on that. But how would you define Brinker's tenure as a member of this front office?
I think the worst part about all of this is that we can't know. Like, there was something strange that happened in this era where the Titans made it impossible to know who was making what decision. And it's really difficult to say, okay, well, here's what he's credited for, here's what he's blamed for. I think broadly you can look at the mistakes made in the 2 years that Carthon was GM and understand that mistakes were made by everybody. I think you can look at last year's class where there was some crossover between the Carthon people who were retained, like Brinker, and the Borgonzi people who were brought in. And then you can kind of nibble and quibble on, okay, well, Brinker hired Borgonzi, and Brinker was the one who had the previous relationship with Reggie McKenzie. So what part of the office building belongs to that versus what part belongs to Borgonzi making the final say decisions on the draft, even though Brinker had veto power? And it's very convoluted, and it's hard to just pin down, oh, he deserves this blame, or, oh, he deserves this credit. I think if Borgonzi works out, it will always be an important footnote that Chad Brinker agreed to choose and chose Borgonzi over John Eric Sullivan, who he had that long professional relationship with, and obviously has since been deemed qualified enough to be the general manager of the Miami Dolphins. It's a tough choice to not pick your friend when your friend is qualified to go with a guy who you see as more qualified or more right for the franchise or whatever it might be. I do think that has to be part of the story, but you also can't totally exonerate the decision-making that led to some of the misses in those 23 and 24 cycles that kind of helped keep the Titans behind after those misses in 2021 and 22. And when you have five lost off seasons, that's a lot to recover from. And I think the most concrete thing we can say is while Brinker was employed, the Titans did not do enough to explicitly recover like they were tasked with doing.
We're talking with Nick Suss of the Tennessean. And Nick, you mentioned, and Adam brought up, how would Brinker's sort of tenure here be looked upon moving forward? And with that being said, how long, because we've had, you know, callers call in or text, and they're not confident that Amy is going to give the time allotted to help change this team or turn this team around. How long do you think realistically Borgonzi has now that Brinker's gone?
Unfortunately, there's only one person who can answer that question, mm-hmm. and that person's probably not calling into DVD today. No. I don't
Fingers
know.
Crossed.
Hey, but we think she may have called in a few times. That's just us.
it might happen. I'm not ruling it out explicitly, but look, how
no,
much
based
time...
No, based upon yeah, yeah. what you, what this organization has went through over the last 5 or 6 years and what they've done as far as movement, how long would you estimate?
I would believe that the next year is still guaranteed. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think that we're going to be talking about any sort of hot seat in 2026. Mostly because I do think there is some recognition that you can't do it off cycle again. You can't get away with a new GM and then a new coach. And then it, like, next time you make a decision, you're probably going to need to clean wholesale. I do think there is some understanding of that. I also don't think that they want to have a totally new direction heading into the new stadium year. I don't know if they want to have a totally new direction heading into the years you have to make the decision about Cam's contract long term. So I do, especially coming off of the goodwill that people have for Borgonzi right now, I do think that there will be time, but that all comes with the asterisk that none of us saw Rand being on the hot seat as quickly as he was. And with Callahan, it kind of came incredibly fast, even if some of us kind of expected it to come quickly. It came even quicker than it was expected, and it'll happen when it happens. And that's the part that's really difficult about following this team, about covering about this team, about talking about this team. One person's whims are going to decide everything. And I know that's true of any professional sports team with an owner, but it feels particularly whiplash inducing when this franchise is so prone to making those decisions the way they do.
Have you been, Nick, protecting yourself against that? Are you doing some extra neck exercises with your workouts and stuff to prevent whiplash?
If there is one thing you can guarantee about me, it is that I am not doing the things to take care of and protect myself. It's all for you guys. I am okay. an open sore for you guys.
Now, Nick, you wrote a an article this morning on a Tennessean about Carnell Tate and him being the number one and how Titans may see him. You got a chance to talk with the assistant general manager about him and about this offense, period. What are they, and the question was, how do you prioritize this offense or how are you envisioning this offense? What was his answer to that?
It was interesting because the first thing he said was the offseason priority was to go out and get weapons for Cam Ward in terms of wide receivers and tight ends. And then he said the second priority was offensive line and building up the trenches. And when I asked, well, was the receiver prioritized over that, said not necessarily. It just comes down to what was available to you at what times and what we were willing to do. So I mean, whatever side of your mouth you want to believe, they did prioritize it. They went out and got Wandale Robinson and Carnell Tate, and they didn't get starting caliber players at those other positions. So whatever the plan was, the end result was going and getting receiver talent. And I've written this a couple of times. I do believe this. There was only one player the Titans could have gotten this entire offseason that would have been a projectable number one receiver past this year. Because you could have gone and gotten Mike Evans or Stephon Diggs or even DJ Moore and got somebody who you know is a number one, but the time is already expiring because of how long they've been in the league. You could have gone out and gotten Juwan Jennings or Romeo Dobbs or any of those guys who you kind of know were number twos and hoped they'd be a number one. You could have waited for Jordan Tyson or Mekhi Lemon, but those guys are not projected to be number ones in the way that Carnell Tate is. They went out and got the only guy who could have been a true future-leaning, future-focused number one. And again, I've said it before, I like the fact that now they can attack all three levels of the passing game with Carnell when you have your number one, number two, number three receivers on the field. If Wandale works the underneath, if Ridley can work kind of the run after catch in the intermediate, and Carnell Tate can kind of attack the deep third with some physicality and with some muscle at the point of attack, you've now opened up three levels of the offense, and I think that's what they were going after. Now you got to keep the quarterback upright for any of it to matter, but it does make sense if this was the priority.
Nick Suss is with us. He is the beat writer for the Titans for the Tennessean. Nick, you did a great job of laying out in simple terms this ebb and flow of Chad Brinker's role, but one thing that I can remember vividly is when they took steps to really roll out in their programming, right, from their website, their podcast, him chronicling the need for a new infrastructure with cohesiveness between scouting and analytics and all these other things that they were way behind in. Amy Adams Strunk, I think, gave him the green light to do that. Do you think as he walks away, the Titans have made progress? Have they caught up to other teams in these areas? Can he at least take credit for that?
That's a good question. I think back to a conversation I had with Chad. This must have been last August. And one of the things he said to me that really struck me was the goal of anybody in his chair is to build an organization that will be better without him than it was with him. And obviously he was talking from the perspective of somebody who wanted to do this for 25 years. He wasn't talking from the perspective of somebody who was looking forward to giving it up. But I do think when you think of Brinker from that perspective, whether you choose to believe that was sincere or just a thing you say to a reporter to sound like you're building forward future-minded, I do think that the Titans probably reflect the image that he saw them reflecting a little bit better than they did when he arrived. And maybe that's because we all understand the circumstances of when he arrived, where you had a head coach and a general manager who didn't seem to be aligned, and where you had an organization that was kind of fighting itself from the inside in so many ways with ownership, coaching staff, roster, and front office. I do think there is more alignment in the Titans coaching staff or within the Titans front office now. I do think that's the case. Whether you want to credit Brinker for that, whether you want to credit Borgonzi for that, or whether you want to credit addition by subtraction of all of the people that were making it a tougher environment by proxy of them not getting along with each other, those people aren't around as much. It's really tough to say, oh, this one guy did it. But I'll point back to something that Borgonzi said in his pre-draft press conference when asked about would he ever pick a player that the coach didn't like. And he just said, you have to have a foundation of trust with the people you work with, that you're not going to put them in a position to fail. And so it's not about I'm only going to draft people they like, but it is about I want to draft people that they think they can succeed with. And that kind of confidence is going to make it easier for them to do their jobs. And I think that perspective is emblematic of the changes that have happened over the last 2-3 years. But again, I find it hard to credit or blame one person for that proliferating.
Do you think others that are already in-house soak up Chad Brinker's day-to-day responsibilities, or do you think they will bring somebody in who doesn't quite have the head honcho title but will do essentially what he was doing?
I haven't been able to get a full answer on this, so I don't want to sidestep it, but I would not be surprised if the roles were absorbed. They have room to hire another person. Front offices love inventing titles that are all variations of the same four words. So they have a vice president of player personnel, right. And they have a director of scouting.
They have enough people.
Personnel. They have they got people a lot of that people. You can arrange these things around, but you can also invent a title, vice president of football strategic operation or something, and sure. Hire somebody to do that, because there's no shortage of adjectives when it comes to creating titles.
You've led me right into my final question, and that is the wild card of Bryce Wasserman, who we hear about. He's got a page on the website that says biography. It has his title, chief of staff, and then there's no other information at all on there. It's been like that for years. We know he's the son-in-law, etc. What do you think his role is, and is it going to be bigger after this news?
I'm not speaking out of turn when I say this. This is purely just observation. I spend a lot of time at events like the Senior Bowl, at events like the Combine, where you see brain trusts moving in concert together, where it's very rare that you just see, oh, that's Howie Roseman, but you see Howie Roseman and the Eagles brain trust, and they're moving as one. And this year at those events, when you saw the Titans brain trust moving, it was Mike Borgonzi, it was Chad Brinker, it was Dave Ziegler, if it was Reggie McKenzie, it was Dan Sagany, the vice president of player personnel, and it was Bryce Wasserman. He was already moving in the circle. I don't know how much more inner circle you can be than guy who was already moving in the circle and is also family with ownership. But if they elevate his role, we'll see. We'll see. It's hard to elevate his role without them actually explaining what the role is. So maybe the good news would be if he gets an elevation, there will be clarification on what he does.
Okay, so maybe a bio. Yeah. Maybe they'll actually put a bio.
Maybe this will force their hand to write at least like 10 to 20 words explaining his day-to-day responsibilities.
I just think it's the most, and it's been pointed out, there's several other people who have a title and a page on the website that have no bio, sometimes not even a picture. I don't get it. Like, hey, where are the IT people over there?
This is not a defense of it so much as it could be an explanation of it. The people who write those are the people who do all of the stuff for the team. So if they did not quite get to that, it is probably because they also have to write the bios of 30 friggin' undrafted free agents this week. Just a lot of new faces around this organization. Maybe it slipped through the cracks. I don't think it did, but maybe it slipped through the cracks.
Nick Suss of the Tennessean has been our guest on D. Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Of course, you can read all of his work at Tennessean.com. Nick, as always, a pleasure. We'll catch up soon.
Yes, we will. Thank you, guys.
615-737-1025. I feel like this Bryce Wasserman fella, he's becoming the new boogeyman I mentioned earlier that Chad Brinker was sort of this boogeyman for Titans fans. I think this Bryce Wasserman is taking that role of the...
It just screams of what's going on. The son-in-law, lawyer, not a football guy. So why is he in the brain trust? What's his role?
What did...
No bio. No, I mean, seriously.
Yes.
You're right.
This organization takes a lot of heat for not having it together from the top down, right? That's still, especially after this news, a major question mark. So now you've got this guy in there. I'm curious. He might be a really good guy. He might be a big asset. But how do we know?
Wes in Hermitage says, this bio thing is really bothering Willie.
Yes,
and I just can't stop laughing. Things that don't matter for 200, Alex.
You don't think it matters? Your chief of staff? No. There's not a single word written about him, and he's the son-in-law?
But this has bothered Willie for some months.
Yeah. Oh, no. This isn't new. This isn't new.
It didn't just start.
Years.
Yes.
This isn't new. But what was it that Jack Black said in School of Rock? Little nepotiz? I think that's what we're talking about here. 615-737-1025. You can react to what Nick Suss had to say. Also coming up next, Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated shares some new details on why the Titans coveted Carnell Tate. We'll discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.